interrupting the current neo-Euclidean climate challenge, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting episode BTWRLM 650. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport. So get you behind the woodshed. One of the things you're going to have if you're going to be free is communication and the ability to do so. So those of you up in Kanukistan may have a little bit of a problem pretty soon. Kanukistan's privacy watchdog not consulted on the Bill C-8 enabling secret internet and phone shutdowns. Legislation that would allow federal ministers to secretly order telecom providers to cut off a Canadian's phone or internet access is advancing without any input from the country's top privacy authority. Privacy Commissioner Philippe Dufresne told a Commons committee that his office was never asked to review Bill C-8 before it was introduced. The bill would authorize the cabinet to compel telecom companies to block services to individuals considered a security threat without needing a judge's approval or any public disclosure. The issue never came up, Dufresne said during a testimony before the House of Commons Ethics Committee. He confirmed, quote, "We are not consulted on specific pieces of legislation before they are tabled. Bill C-8 would allow the federal cabinet to direct a telecom provider to deny all services to a specific person based solely on the government's assessment of a threat. No warrant would be required. No independent body would be tasked with reviewing the decision." Conservative MP Michael Barrett raised an alarm over what he described as a dangerous overreach. He said the bill would allow the government to quietly seize control of individuals' communications with no transparency and no legal checks. Quote, "Without meaningful limits, bills like C-8 can hand the government secret powers over Canadians' communications," Barrett said. "It's a serious setback for privacy and for democracy." He pressed Dufresne on whether Parliament should be required to conduct privacy assessments before passing legislation with such broad surveillance potential. Quote, "Isn't Parliament simply being asked to grant sweeping powers of surveillance to the government without a formal review?" Barrett asked. Dufresne responded, quote, "It's not a legal obligation under the Privacy Act." And so now we see what's going on when they write this legislation and what really all has to be in it. As I've said before, it's no different than policies that they're written for cops. You got to make sure everything has its limitations built in. In this case, it's clear they probably don't want the limitation at all. But let me touch a little bit about that secret internet. Again, reallibertymedia.com. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to establish some way to make that so-called secret internet. The secret is you possess the controls of it. No one can see into that. Well, unless you want to go ahead and get the brand newest type of computers that are going to have their AI assistant built in, and you can't evade these guys. You can't avoid them either. So we want to build a secret type of internet that they just don't know. And that's, again, we can use the internet, it's just they don't know that you're using it. You are having essentially an app that allows that to happen, and you get to select what you want, and we pipe it through. But one part of it gets piped through RLM just so we have a place to meet. And as I think about that, thank you for everybody that's signing up for members. I'm not quite sure all that's involved, but I think you get a notice on what the broadcasts are putting out. And as we get more and more integrated, there's going to be more and more of that coming out, and you'll be able to be a part of all that and see what we're trying to do and get done in order to try and be ahead of these people that just don't want to, they don't consult with anybody. They are the law, if you will. And nobody's innocent. Excesses of democracy. Europe nixing free internet and private communications. Ex-owner Elon Musk has reposted a warning from Telegram founder Pavel Durov about the EU's crusade against free speech and privacy. So we jump across the pond, it's no different. Isn't that interesting? Despite all the so-called rights coming out of the crown and the king, and those that fell into our hands apparently, at the point of a spear and the Magna Carta, they're all just being whisked away as a condition of what? It's a veneer of governance over the top of people's government, and they haven't really paid attention to that. Nor, let's say in Kanukistan, have they figured out they're really not that too free. And there may be a whole other thing going on. I think Trump exposed something about acquiring Kanukistan, whether or not anybody wants to agree with it. If it fits a future plan, and there is a plan that would have this happen, a future region would be developed, including all the lands up north on this side of the pond and starting to creep over the other, the Greenland area as well. They're just going to make this one big global region to be divided up. Chat control is a controversial EU regulation under which messengers and social networks would automatically scan users' messages and attached files, cybersecurity expert Sergei Valkulin tells Sputnik. The Council of the European Union is pushing the initiative under the guise of child protection. As I say these words, my mind just flies back. How long have I been talking about, warning about this, showing you where it's written, and how this is going to be coming forward, and we're in that day. It's happening right now before us. Apparently there's no idea or understanding to how to stop it, nor maybe the will. I'm not so sure yet. As I asked last episode, was I asking too much? Maybe I expected too much that people would be looking for a secret internet, even secret to the government. And that's what we were, again, trying to build. But again, if you have a donation you can do, please look for the donation buttons and for content. I would still like to see a whole lot more hosts providing content to the network and being a place that people will come and spend some time to get educated on what's going on. Like these things, because we're going to have to, again, position ourselves ahead of time. And it's coming fast against us. We may not be able to do that fully either. So there's going to be a lot of maybe situations where we have to put up with some things until we can figure it out. And it's going to take some learning. Again, I'm shifting over from the Microsofts over into Linux. I already did it once. I'm trying to do a different one. And setting them up is just it's a little different thing. You have to figure out a different way to do it. It's not necessarily so complicated. It's just more hands-on. But it's free, if you will. It's not so encumbered as what the corporations are coming down as they start to make you pay for the machine and then they take control of it. We're going to have to learn how to stay away from all that. That's when I say de-Google a phone. That's part of it. Your phone, they give you a layer above what Google has to control the phone or anybody or your provider, even though you supposedly own it. If those of you that have a phone, you don't get right to the hardware. This chat control relies on two main points: scanning content and verifying users' ages, requiring platforms to check messages on the device before encryption. So let me repeat the important part right there. Before encryption. De facto rendering this encryption meaningless. Your messages could be read by virtually anyone. They would be stored for a certain period and the third parties would have access not only to the messages but also to media files. Again, as I say these words, how long am I talking about the third party liability and the danger to people that are not going to be subject to any restrictions that we think are imposed on the government? They're certainly not on third parties, as we're watching daily take us out. As we all know, this data could be easily leaked, Bakulin says. AI chatbot requests are also likely to become a target, according to information security expert Evgeny Tsarev, the CEO of RTM Group. Quote, chatbot GPT creators stated that they would monitor users' attempts to learn something dangerous, for example, making poisons, Tsarev tells Sputnik. They frame it as if the information would be shared with law enforcement, and it's clear which law enforcement they mean, the Americans. The EU has presently delayed the chat control law over privacy concerns raised by some of its member states. Germany stalled the bill despite aggressive attempts by Denmark and France to pass it. Let me remind us, back in the PATIOT Act, that the progenies of that allowed for Interpol to be brought into the United States to pull us out into Europe. And so we're hearing right there that the information is going to be for the Americans. So there's still an interoperable condition between European law enforcement and American law enforcement. There's a strong chance it will eventually be adopted, Valkulin believes. Just think about Edward Snowden, who exposed how the U.S. government survey other users, that there's nothing new about it. Why would Europe spearhead the initiative abusing privacy of its citizens? I would call it excesses of democracy, Valkulin says, adding that the trend is clear. Soon there will be no free internet or free communication in Europe. Just like the Kanukistan, right? But this thing, this democracy, this unity is what they're after. So that's also been written. There's nothing even new in that. As I said, democracy is a weapon. And it's being reported that all these digital controls are nothing good at all. From a DuckDuck search assistant, I get this information to describe here. I couldn't find a good link that I wanted to pass, but we'll go with this. The UK's digital identification system was hacked not once, but twice. The first breach, it was hidden. The second, no one noticed until the hackers announced it. The vulnerabilities here, folks. The ones that the government doesn't care about because they keep pressing forward. The UK's digital identification system experienced two significant hacks. The first breach was concealed, while the second was unnoticed until the hackers publicly revealed it. The overview of the UK's digital identification system breaches were that the UK's digital identification system was faced with the hacks highlighting vulnerabilities in its security. This is that identification system that's mandatory now, understand? The first breach occurred without immediate detection. It festered and went along. They were denying it all along, hiding it. Details about the attack were not disclosed until much later, raising concerns about the system's security measures and monitoring capabilities. Well, that was kind of settled in the second one, the public announcement. That's what it was required by the people who did the hack. Government didn't even notice. The second breach was more alarming as it was already only recognized after the hackers themselves revealed it. This incident indicates a severe lapse in the system's ability to identify and respond to security threats in real time. These breaches underscore the need for improved cybersecurity protocols and monitoring to protect sensitive digital identification systems. Is that what it shows us? How about if we just say no? How about stop this nonsense, and then we don't have to worry about it all, correct? Leave people alone. People, I don't know why people aren't insisting that they be left alone. And those excesses of democracy are being imposed right here at home. United States of America, they call it. Coinbase CEO Brian Armstrong opposes Senate Democrats' plan to extend ID verification to centralized finance. Again, these phrases, how long have I been talking about this going to happen? On the books, ready to go, in the legislation, needing to be worked on, government's denying it, and here we are. Right around the corner to be fulfilled. But let me give you a hint. Decentralized finance isn't decentralized. Coinbase CEO Brian Armstrong has joined the growing wave of opposition. Is that like a princess wave in a parade? The growing wave of opposition to a new Senate Democrat proposal aimed at tightening federal control over decentralized finance. I just pause here. Are you thinking clearly on this? How is it that they can centrally control something that's decentralized? Shows you that it's flawed. It's been flawed. I've talked about it. People want to deny this. There's a way to make it truly decentralized, but it's not to control it from a central point and not to use an accessible blockchain the way they've got it going, being chained to that anybody can look in or eventually so. The draft legislation would give the Treasury Department, remember those CBDCs? They dropped those in favor of what? Stable coins. And I told you the dangers of all that. But here that comes the United States is coming this way, not the other way. The draft legislation would give the Treasury Department expanded authority to target DeFi protocols and extend know-your-customer rules to a broad range of non-custodial interfaces and wallet developers. Now, know-your-customer rules are from what? Early on, the PATRIOT Act. You are presumed to be some money launderer, some criminal. You got to keep track of everybody. Now it's becoming into play. If adopted, the Senate Democrats' proposal would have profound implications for financial privacy in the United States. By attempting to impose know-your-customer rules on DeFi front ends and non-custodial wallets, The legislation would effectively strip users of the ability to transact anonymously or pseudo-anonymously on open financial networks. These tools allow individuals to maintain sovereignty over their funds without relying on centralized intermediaries. Subjecting them to surveillance mandates would mean forcing developers and interface operators to collect personal data that were never designed to access or store on impossible tasks in many cases and a clear threat to user anonymity. The broader consequence is a chilling effect on privacy-focused innovation. And that's the whole test. You can complain that it has a chilling effect, when they say, but you're still involved. Because it becomes the very prickly pear that the courts get us into. Because the courts, the judicial branch, beholden to the Bar Association through its members, is always promoting sustainable development, which is where we get the name for why all this starts to come true. It's actually not what we hear from the UN. It's an economic servitude, a debt slavery system that you can then read more clearly in the A2030 paperwork, the Agenda 2030 paperwork. And I've read that here years and years ago. Developers who build permissionless tools that enable self-custody. So listen to that. You think you're in custody? Tell you open-air Siberian gulag, open-air prison, digital. Self-custody. No, they're going to have custody. Permissionless tools that enable self-custody and decentralized access would face legal exposure simply by contributing to open source code or maintaining user interfaces. This would not only discourage U.S.-based development, but could also erode protections for individuals seeking alternatives to traditional financial surveillance systems. But if you just get out of the digital system? When it comes, push comes to shove, what are you going to do? I would hope your answer is sound money. Meet people again. Do business. Literally hand to hand. Not combat. Commerce. Rather than targeting criminal activity narrowly, the proposal sets a precedent for blanket financial monitoring that treats all users as potential suspects. And what have I been saying again? But this came back from the PATRT Act. This is not new. This is just the implementation now. For privacy advocates, this is a direct challenge to the right to private, censorship-resistant economic participation. Well, if your desire is to be in the Siberian gulag, you're not going to have much to say. You're in custody of something else, someone else. And if you make this actually decentralized and don't make a big deal about it, you control it. You don't make, a central exchange. They're going to be very much harder to press to do much about it. The centralized control of not really decentralized vaporware gets people where? BlackRock CEO Larry Fink says tokenization is the new wave of opportunity. So tokenization is this blockchaining. Tokenizations. Token citizenship is what I've been calling it. But this is not just about people. Tokenization is the new wave of opportunity. BlackRock CEO Larry Fink said tokenization will drive the firm's next wave of opportunity, predicting that traditional assets will increasingly move onto blockchains over the coming decades. Speaking in an interview to CNBC's Squawk Box, Fink said institutions are likely to start moving away from traditional financial assets by repotting them in a digital manner. Little plants that you is. All those assets are going to be, tokenized. As I've been explaining the entire time that I've been broadcasting and talking on these subject matters. I do believe we're just at the beginning of the tokenization of all assets, from real estate to equities to bonds across the board, he said. We look at that as the next wave of opportunity for BlackRock over the next tens of years. So remember when I reported the blockchain experiment in Texas for all landed property and what that will do to your property rights and many other things appurtenant to that property that they're going to interfere with, and the translation that happens when you move it in from the paperwork, the archives that exist now, and you tokenize them, it removes them and puts them into a private holding. You away from your rights. Your rights stay where they are, and this tokenization doesn't have those. And the only evidence you have is that blockchain token. And so this becomes very important to understand what property is and why you're not going to have this property, because you aren't going to understand how to protect it, what the evidence of your property is and how to protect it. So everything he's telling us, just like I've reported long time ago, everything has a product code, even people. Remember I said people that are already going to the food banks are getting a QR code. It's an identity number. I would not doubt that number and that code, that PCR code will actually follow them now. But I don't know that. I'm just saying it's already being implemented. And that will be their digital ID. Again, the QR code is created from that information. And it'll be exploited and manipulated or denied or even stolen. If you listen to what these big bankers are talking about and you go to private equities and you see that's what they're doing, that's what I was warning people and have been warning relative to these stable coins. It's exactly how they're going to pull it off. Larry Fink, the head of the largest bank of investment house, is telling us that's where they're going to put their efforts because that's where it's going. And people aren't going to understand how to keep separate from it. And I don't know what to say. There has to be an education in people, and I'm hoping they'll be able to. And we want to remember, we talked about your sovereign information, sovereign assets, your sovereign wealth. Well, Russia knows all about sovereign wealth being stolen. We have the evidence of it in the international news. And what did Russia do? They immediately started an alternative. In America, you need to maintain your existing alternative. Don't let them get you your property into that. Don't allow them to funnel you into tokenization. See, there's no right in a token. There's no right in the one who possesses and controls that token. They may say it's yours, but it's like your fiat money going to a bank. You put it in your deposit. It's not your money. You just get accounted for the debt that you're going to need to pull back out. If you need the cash, if they'll give it to you now, even that's conditioned. So maintain that existing system that's an alternate to the new one coming on, the transformation, or you're not going to have any property. And you'll like it. Or else. That's the next wave of opportunity the Rat Fink is talking about here. All guided and done by what and whom? Keep track by what? This blockchaining. Anduril and Palantir battlefield communication systems, very high risk, U.S. Army memo says. Just think back my last few episodes. I've been talking about Palantir, been talking about Oracle, been talking about these databases, all these data service centers, which are actually turning into big supercomputers. I just started realizing where I thought it was just hard drives receiving data. That's what Elon Musk is telling us. These are big brain, computer brains. They're not brains at all. They're big computer processing centers. They're not like we think, oh, the repository of data only. That's what they're building. Didn't really dawn on me until recently. Army memo highlights security issues an NGC2 platform. Anduril says memo reflects outdated program state. Palantir stocks drop over 7%. The much needed modernization of the U.S. Army's battlefield communications network being undertaken by Anduril, Palantir opens new tab and others is rife with fundamental security problems and vulnerabilities and should be treated as a very high risk according to a recent internal Army memo. Two Silicon Valley companies, led by allies of United States President Donald Trump, have gained access to the Pentagon's lucrative flow of contracts on the promise of quickly providing less expensive and more sophisticated weapons than the Pentagon's long-standing arms providers. So these are arms providers, understand now, Palantir, Anduril. And understand, go read the word what sophisticated means, actually. Not what you think it is. Go read what it is and put it in its worst sense. And then reread that sentence, re-listen to this, and go put that meaning there. And you'll see why you can say it's sliding into the stinking abyss. The memo from the Army Chief's Technology Officer about the NGC2 platform that connects soldiers, sensors, vehicles, and commanders with real-time data paints a bleak security picture of the initial product. Well, we cannot control who sees what, we cannot see what users are doing, and we cannot verify that the software itself is secure, the memo says. Well, we know that it isn't secure. That's why it exists. As to the who and what, we already know, cannot see. So it's not enough, in this case, not good enough for the military. And is that why Trump is setting it against you? This is not secure. It's not a secure system, no matter what they do. And it's a third party imposition. A Palantir spokesman said that no vulnerabilities were found in the Palantir platform. However, the Army internal memo written by Gabrielle Chiuli, the Army Chief Technology Officer authorizing officials of the NGC2 prototype, said, given the current security posture of the platform and the hosted third-party applications, the likelihood of an adversary gaining persistent, undetectable access to the platform requires the system be treated as very high risk. But the government will tell you safe and effective, folks, don't they? The Siberian Gulag is safe and effective for the digital wardens, as the United States more openly becomes the battlefield and Americans the homegrown enemy of the state. Here's why that's relevant to us. You think they're talking about the government. They're talking about the military of the government. That's the war against you, and they're putting all your lives into those companies and their products. Speaking of chaos and mayhem, then, exclusive, Trump may launch missiles from warships into California this Friday and Saturday as part of a vanity parade. So remember I've been saying that they're turning the guns in the gates. You just watch how they're doing this. It takes a long time. The PATRT Act started the whole process. And here we now, seems innocuous enough, except it's really not, and it's causing trouble. Let them eat chaos, remember. Sources tell Midas Touch the White House will shut down portions of the I-5 for Vice President J.D. Vance's Marine Corps spectacle during No Kings protests, triggering chaos, gridlock, and outrage. Sources tell Midas Touch the White House will shut it all down. And they're doing that without much of an interaction. That's been what has caused the trouble. Midas Touch has learned that several sources that the White House has plans to close major sections of Interstate I-5 for this Friday and Saturday. The Trump administration is apparently finalizing plans for 2 days of events under the pretext of the 250th anniversary of the U.S. Marine Corps. Sources close to Midas described the closure as part of a vanity parade that may involve Navy ships shooting live missiles into Camp Pendleton as a show of force. As a show of military force against Americans, dare I say, the homegrown, exercising their First Amendment rights. And after I've been warning that the U.S. government would be facing those guns inward. The major road closures coincide with the federal government closure, leaving thousands of Marines and federal employees unpaid, even as they are ordered to support the festivities. Interstate 5, Southern California's economic backbone, carries more than 80,000 travelers daily and moves $94 million in freight every day between San Diego and Orange counties. Just north of Oceanside, over 65,000 vehicles cross the county line daily, half of them work-related. Experts warn the closure could spark gridlock, stretching from Dana Point to Del Mar with delays of up to 8 hours in each direction. The ripple effect would cripple emergency response times, business operations, and regional supply chains, costing an estimated $8.2 million in lost visitor spending per day. Local officials say the event was announced with scant notice, no coordination, and zero transparency. Three of those areas I've talked about all the time. Notice, coordination with state and federal, and zero transparency. Well, there's all kinds of transparency. You can't see what the federal government wants to do here. Unconfirmed reports suggest the Pentagon may authorize live naval ordnance demonstrations off Southern California coast during the celebration. Governor Gavin Newsom's office confirmed the Midas Touch. He is working with local partners to minimize what would be a massive disruption and reckless disregard for California's infrastructure and communities. Governor Newsom directly responded to Midas Touch story on X as well, writing, quote, Donald Trump and J.D. Vance think that shutting down the I-5 to shoot out missiles from ships is how you respect the military, urging the administration to put aside your vanity parade. Residents near Oceanside and San Clemente have expressed alarm at the lack of communication, especially given the proximity of dense suburban neighborhoods to Camp Pendleton's firing ranges. The very Marines being celebrated have been turned into political pawns as the shutdown battle unfolds against what one senior defense official called a taxpayer-funded campaign reel. A senior state transportation official told Midas Touch, closing down a critical corridor during a shutdown for a vanity event without even consulting the state authorities? It's indefensible. As Southern California braces for the fallout, one thing is clear. Vice President Vance's vanity parade risks turning the patriotic commemoration into a logistical and political fiasco, leaving taxpayers, commuters, and troops caught in the crossfire. And after that unnecessary Trump military force flex within the gates, Newsom warns of missiles of I-5, but freeway will remain open during live fire Camp Pendleton event. Marine Corps said I-5 will remain open after Governor Gavin Newsom raised concerns that Navy ships will fire live ordnance over the freeway during a military celebration. Newsom's office criticized the Trump administration for lack of coordination on the Camp Pendleton event featuring Vice President J.D. Vance and 15,000 attendees. Now, how are they going to get in and out if the roads are closed for 8 hours delay? But at any rate, how nuts this starts to be. But you think the 10th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States would have been enough to require state and federal coordination. Just like I've explained, it's supposed to happen. Just like I've explained, I've been involved in. It's there. The 10th Amendment, it does work. It's part of the process. But not for Trump. Let them eat chaos in the Trump administration. Now, politics aside, a governor has an obligation to mitigate those potential harms. He has to be looking over the state and make sure it runs and functions correctly, and the people aren't encumbered too much. California Department of Transportation spokesman Edward Barrera said Wednesday that based on the potential scenarios shared with us by the federal government, the agency was prepared to shut down a section of Interstate 5 for the safety of California motorists. Newsom took to the social media site X to criticize the event, putting the blame on the White House for the possible closure of I-5. Donald Trump and J.D. Vance think that shutting down I-5 and shoot missiles from a ship is how you respect the military, he wrote. As I repeat, the second story, consistent, reporting the same things. A few hours after Newsom's X post, the Marine Corps released a statement saying its weekend exercises would not require shutting down the freeway. In advance of the training event and demonstration, I thought it was a commemoration, folks, but in advance of a training event and demonstration, we conducted a detailed risk assessment according to the statement. All participants will be briefed. Medical, fire, and emergency assets will be on site, and multiple rehearsals will be conducted. All air, surface, and ground movements are scripted and rehearsed in accordance with standard operating procedures and established safety checklists. And why then? Governor Gavin Newsom's office backed off the plans to close parts of the Interstate 5 on Thursday after mounting tension with the federal and military officials over the White House directed. The White House directed live fire event off Camp Pendleton's coast. So we got like a micromanager in Washington, not on the left, it's on the west coast that this thing's going to happen. He's on the east coast, but he's going to micromanage this thing, and they're going to completely destroy the relationship between the federal and the state government by not recognizing the 10th Amendment, and all the agencies should have coordinated with the state long prior to avoid the chaos and mayhem Trump thought would be funny to cause the state of California problems for essentially political ends. But this is setting a more ominous precedent to us, that the federal government would turn the guns inward upon whatever the current government de jure believes are the domestic enemy of the state, even if exercising constitutionally guaranteed or fundamental rights. And this is the thing we all have to be concerned about. Even if we have look and find someone that's speaking counter to what we believe, and they're doing their protests or they're doing their celebrations or whatever, the government de jure steps in and says, well, you're an enemy. You're a threat. Just like you're hearing that being done in the UK or Kyrgyzstan. You see no difference actually between them. They just function a little different in how they're going to get at us. And as I've said to you over there in Washington, D.C., it's a district, not a state. That is why the 10th Amendment exists and why coordination, not cooperation or collaboration, remember? None of that. No, coordination. I told you about Jefferson Mining District being a miners' government, acknowledged by the federal government as being a miners' government, a government, not just this association, and it had coordination power to deal with the state and federal governments directly, not as in second place, not as a collaborator that we have a lead agency, no, as a government face-to-face right at the table. It's a much more powerful position, and it works a lot different. And these are the kinds of things I've been asking people to start looking in their laws. They start getting involved, start looking, finding the better paths that are there, that are have looked at the Constitution. But coordination, whatever I might think about Gavin Newsom, was absolutely not supposed to be done because the 10th Amendment required it. Trump could care less. I don't care what the administration, what J.D. Vance wants to call it, what their names are. The law required that they come together and coordinate all these things so that it wouldn't create chaos. That's why that's there for. That's why you do it for. So there isn't chaos. Again, notice ahead of time, everybody knows. For what? A show, right? A theater. It's all scripted, they said. We heard it. We read it right there. Again, the showman that Trump ends up being. He doesn't have to be, I guess, is the point. We could be doing things the way they're supposed to and be proud of what the government does. No, they don't want to do it that way because it's not about doing that anymore. If that ceased a long time ago. And now we're moving into a new time. As I told you, the district sits over there in the East Coast. It's not a state. It has a 10th Amendment obligation to deal with the states. It also has to supposedly deal with the Constitution. And then you get these things that are not enumerated in the Constitution that develop in the agencies, and they start to look for ways to get around that Constitution. And they are starting to do, as I told you, they've treated you all as migrants. You're not a citizen of Washington, of the district. The district rules now. We've been Lincolnized, and then the PAITRIT Act-ized. And now we've got a different world we're looking at. And so you're really all migrants in the so-called democracy. You're not in a republic, and you're all pretty close to not having your property rights, and you're going to like it. Even if you don't, you're going to like it. Or else. So now we're using a immigration agency to now get at the people of America through the excuse that we're looking for people that shouldn't be here. You're looking at the UK, do the identical thing. Oh, you can't work because we let a bunch of people in and we can't keep track of, so now you got to pay for it. You're the guilty party. ICE bought vehicles equipped with fake cell towers to spy on phones. This is fake cell tower equipment. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, paid $825,000 earlier this year to a company that manufactures vehicles equipped with various technologies for law enforcement, including fake cell phone towers known as cell site simulators, which can be used to spy on nearby phones. According to the public records, the award dated May 8th provides cell sites simulator CSS vehicles to support the Homeland Security Technical Operations Program and is a modification for additional CSS vehicles. So listen what they just did there. We started out with ICE, but who was it that did the acquisition? Homeland Security. So the homegrown better start paying attention here. The contract was signed with TechOps Specialty Vehicles, a TOSV, a Maryland-based company. TOSV also signed a similar contract with ICE in September 2024 for $818,000, showing that the relations between the agency and the company predates the Trump administration. And so I want, again, I didn't think I was going to see this so much, but we're talking about, this is all since the PATROT Act and its progeny and how far reduced we were. This is the latest federal contract that reveals some of the technologies powering the Trump administration's deportation crackdown. So let me add this. It starts before Trump, but it doesn't change in Trump. No, the unit party just continues it. The billionaire boys now have access to this as well. Cell site simulators also go by the name Stingrays because some of the earlier types of these devices made by defense contractor Harris, now L3 Harris, were named that way. Since then, Stingrays have become a catch-all name for this type of technology, also known as IMSI catchers. IMSI stands for International Mobile Subscriber Identity, a unique number that identifies every cell phone user in the world. And so we're already identified. If you didn't catch it before, I've mentioned this before, but here it is again. They're letting us know. This is the Newstis article that we need to watch, and why it becomes so important to keep track of it, not as a story, as what the government's letting you know is going on, right in front of your face, and what they're doing. And what, it's up to us to extrapolate, because as the Lieber Code, the military occupation that was written by Francis Lieber and Lincoln's, the Lincolnization of America, which became international law, you knows them when you sees them. The very first article says they don't have to tell you you're being occupied people. You just know it when you see it. So you got to learn to see it. I think this is part of it. There's been a continuing thread that you can just watch. It just develops and keeps developing. It never turns from this. As I said, well, it might have started before Trump. We heard of stingrays long years back. No, but he's going to amplify their use, put them into ICE, and if you listen to what's going on under ICE and what all the data sharing they're doing in Palantir, which will come up here in a moment, you see how it's starting to integrate nationally. And then it goes international as well. It's like there's no stop. You're hearing it in the UK article I just read. Their surveillance is being done for Americans. You kind of think Five Eyes and things like that. There's no separation anymore on the administrative side of the world. As the name suggests, cell site simulator tools can mimic a cell phone tower, tricking every phone in its nearby range to connect to the device and thus giving law enforcement the ability to better identify the real-world location of those phones and their owners. Some cell site simulators can also intercept regular calls, text messages, and internet traffic. Authorities can get data from traditional cell phone towers to find the current or past location of a suspect, but the location is usually not very precise. These devices are also shrouded in secrecy because law enforcement agencies that use them are under a strict non-disclosure agreements not to reveal how the devices work. That's got to be military, right? I mean, they're just not going to give this stuff up. And so now they're expanding from immigration to all we all. Headquartered just outside of Washington, D.C., a district, not a state, just outside, TOSSV sells a wide range of customizable vehicles to law enforcement, such as vans for SWAT, armed response teams, bomb squads, and so-called mobile lab and cover surveillance vehicles. Among these vehicles for police forces, TOSV lists several projects, including one described as DHS, Mobile Forensics Labs, referring to the Department of Homeland Security. You homegrown or future homegrown, you don't even know who you is. Are you listening? According to the website, these mobile forensic vans are equipped for on-site forensic analysis and documentation and have secure compartments for evidence preservation and investigative tools and enable seamless case file updates and evidence logging. Another project is the DHS Mobile Command Van, which TOSV says is configurable for advanced surveillance and mission coordination. They'll do it between themselves, but they won't do it with the state, like the Constitution says, will they? It's unclear if these vans are the same vehicles that include cell site simulators, as there's no mention of the cell phone surveillance tool anywhere in the TOSV's website. ICE has other contracts with TOSV for mobile forensic labs, which don't specify which technologies are located in the vans. According to the website, TOSV also sells so-called bookmobiles, which appear to be libraries on wheels, as well as medical and fire department vehicles. And the intrusion don't stop there. ICE wants to build a 24/7 social media surveillance team. Remember, go back to that evidence. They're going to use AI. They're tied in with Palantir. Remember, that's AI evidence. Like AI arrow prone. Arrow prone. AI arrow prone and AI evidence. And it's always got to be wrong. There's nothing 100% about it. Don't forget that part. But they're calling it evidence. And I'll tell you the truth. I've been looking around. I don't know of any court that's actually accepted just any AI evidence. In fact, I noticed they're starting to throw them out. Like, lawyers are using the AI products, and they're being tossed out and being gotten in trouble a bit. So this is another problem. We say, oh, it's going to be evidence. Is it really? Actually evidence. Really? Well, they're pulling it together. They make their dossier on all y'all. All we all. And so the ICE, now, here's what I just said. Everyone's an immigrant. Otherwise, how would ICA be able to look at social media completely for surveillance? Unless that's what you're deemed. Until someone decides, oh, they don't want to treat you like that. And we already know that they'll go ahead and make the mistakes. United States citizens have been deported already. They weren't supposed to be, but there they are. And who are you going to call? And then when they do you indefinite detention and you can't contact anybody, who are you going to call? I hope people are putting this stuff together. I've been talking about this since I've been broadcasting, and it's long before RLM. The United States immigration authorities are moving dramatically to expand their social media surveillance with plans to hire nearly 30 contractors to sift through posts, photos, and messages, raw material to be transformed into intelligence for deportation raids and arrests, even if they're wrong. Understand, you read some of the further stories, you'll see them. Americans are being picked up, and you don't have a right when they pick you up. And they don't care. The program envisions stationing nearly 30 private analysts at immigration and customs enforcement facilities in Vermont and Southern California. Their job? Scour Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and other platforms, converting posts and profiles into fresh leads for enforcement raids. Now, what I've been saying for RLM and trying to make this thing decentralized and harder to get at and harder to sense, they aren't going to be able to see you in some feed. You're not going to be in a major big feed. Your information will be going out into the ones you choose. This is not even the federated idea is what we're talking about here, but it's a special application to it is what we're trying to do. They're not going to be able to look in just anywhere. And this is part of limiting your exposure and vulnerabilities. And that's what I believe that may help us as we move forward. It makes it much more harder for you to become an accident to them. And they take all your rights away until hopefully you get a chance to speak before they've really harmed you. But we listen very carefully to how they do this, and we're looking for systems that we're going to avoid doing that. The scope of the information contractors are expected to collect is broad. Again, remember, there's no warrant here. They're not needing any warrant. They just vacuum up data. Doesn't matter. Just vacuum it up. And they don't need to know that, they don't need to have probable cause that you've done anything to even look. It's the state of America that Trump is making great again by it. If you can figure that one out, make sense of that for me, please. Draft instructions specify open source intelligence. Public posts, photos, and messages on platforms from Facebook to Reddit to TikTok, analysts may also be tasked with checking more obscure or foreign-based sites, such as Russia's VKontakte. So those are big centralized places that they'll be going to. But what if you jumped into a private system and you looked at, they said these are public facing, public posts, and they're not public that you go into. Might that be better for you in the future? As they start to scour and they find all kinds of homegrown to go after, because the government du jour says they don't like you no more. They would also be armed with powerful commercial databases such as LexisNexis, Accurint, and Thomson Reuters Clear, which knit together property records, phone bills, utilities, vehicle registrations, and other personal details into searchable files. The plan calls for strict turnaround times, urgent cases such as suspected national security threats, or people on ICE's top 10 most wanted list must be searched within 30 minutes. And AI pronation enhanced for AI evidence collection. The plan goes beyond staffing. ICE also wants algorithms, asking contractors to spell out how they might weave an artificial intelligence into the hunt. A solicitation that mirrors other recent proposals. Well, we already knew they were going to go there. And what are we finding? But it's error prone. And it produces error prone AI evidence. The agency has also set aside more than $1 million a year to arm analysts with latest surveillance tools. Surveillance tools not limited to immigration, but the homegrown, exercising their freedom of expression and right to incriminate themselves. Earlier this year, The Intercept revealed that ICE had floated plans for a system that could automatically scan social media for negative sentiment toward the agency and flag users thought to show a proclivity for violence. Procurement records previously reviewed by 404 Media identified software used by the agency to build dossiers on flagged individuals, compiling personal data and family links, and even using facial recognition to connect images across the web. Observers warned it was unclear how such technology could distinguish genuine threats from political speech. ICE's main investigative database, built by Palantir Technologies, already uses algorithm analysis to filter huge, huge populations and generates leads. The new contract would funnel fresh social media and open source inputs directly into the system, further automating the process. Can you tell me how many migrants are in this country or wherever they are, everybody in these that are actually illegal compared to the number that are not, that are using the process, is no different than requiring you to be a pedophile or a minor in order to have to age verify yourself. It's the same stupidness that they're using to beat us down and take control. You're presumed guilty. All of social media now is their oyster, if you will. They can sift through it even though you got nothing, and they can put it together. Nothing that I can see, they can do this. Nothing stops them from giving a little bit of information to the local cops for anything. It doesn't have to be immigration now. And there's stories coming out that that's what's been going on. I've already talked about one relative to that abortion case and the local Texas cop looking, running that lady down, looking out for her welfare. And since when has America ever been this surveilled, to be surveilled again, whether great or not? Past experience shows guardrails can be flimsy, honored more in paperwork than in practice. Other documents obtained by 404 Media this summer revealed that police in Medford, Oregon performed license plate reader searches for ICE's Homeland Security Investigation Division. Again, it's in Homeland Security, not actually ICE here they're looking. While HSI agents later ran searches in federal databases at the request of local police. An informal back and forth that effectively gave ICE access to tools it wasn't authorized to use. So is the question remain, is it really evidence what they're gathering? And how are you going to know it's not proper unless you know to go question it and challenge every bit of it and look at all the chaos and the time and the waste while you're under the thumb if they ever picked you up by accident? And we kind of look through this as a migrant type problem. we're missing the point. They're going to find, like, any way that they think that they can, that someone believes that you violated, some more revenue enhancement they want to do, some political view of, that a prosecutor wants to be an elected official, become a judge, wants to show how many cases he can attack, you know, prosecute. 92% to 98% is not good enough. Other surveillance contracts have raised similar alarms. In September 2024, ICA signed a $2 million contract with Paragon, an Israeli spyware company whose flagship product, Graphite, can allegedly remotely hack messages, messaging apps like WhatsApp and Signal, another company I just recently reported on. The Biden White House quickly froze the deal under an executive order restricting spyware use, but ICE reactivated it August 2025 under the Trump administration. Last month, the 404 Media filed a Freedom of Information lawsuit demanding ICE release the contract and related records, citing widespread concern that the tool could be used to target immigrants, journalists, and activists. Okay, so that went pretty quick right away from the migrant, didn't it? And showing the fiat systems anticipate future wars as if by plan even, maybe even through digitally coerced conscription of their soldiers now for the bankers, as the guns turn in, as the surveillance turns in, as the cyber gulag, you hear the clanking doors of the digital locks. Do they have doors in digital locks? IMF says global public debt to exceed 100% of GDP by 2029. That's very close to 2030, don't you think? Reached high since 1948. And so we're returning to another type of problem that's essentially, again, planned and set up and watched, and here it comes. And you start wondering what Agenda 2030 was all about and how they're going to trigger that and why. The global public debt. Do you see these phrases? What do we, the global public, owes whom? But here it is. The global public debt will exceed 100% of GDP by 2029 and reach an historic high level in almost 80 years, the International Monetary Fund, IMF, said on Wednesday. Global public debt is projected to rise above 100% GDP by 2029. In such a scenario, public debt would be at its highest since 1948, the IMF said in its new fiscal monitor report. There is a 5% risk that the debt would reach 123% in the next 4 years, it added. The IMF pointed out that this outlook has worsened since the pandemic. So please connect these dots. These are what they set up to do this, actually. This is a report on how it functioned and that it worked. The fund also warned of the wide distribution of risks, which could lead to even faster debt accumulation, according to the report. Beyond the present, fiscal risks looms large, it says. And I'm going to say, by stating wide distribution of risks, the IMF is suggesting or anticipating war or increasing global conflicts, likely initiated by the United States, either directly or through proxy, which can significantly impact global economic stability. And why the IMF report mentions it, right? Donald Peace Faker, my word means nothing, Trump. If and all y'all haven't noticed what's going on in that Gaza ceasefire. Yeah, only Gaza has to cease fire, especially now that the hostages were returned. And why, out of the blue, did Trump offer that he doesn't think he can get to heaven? So this implication to war and increasing conflicts fits the prediction that with the impending U.S. economic crisis, the United States needs a greater distraction, or for which Trump has done nothing to restore confidence in the dollar, well, except that as to its continued use as a weapon. And the best distraction to unavoidable economic crisis is usually war, where your sons and daughters, wives and husbands, sisters and brothers get to die after they do their skit over there in California. and why the report anticipates debt going to 123% of GDP soon. It's a nice round number for my mathematicians as a stamp of approval, don't you think? 1-3%? Who are they speaking to? This is BTWRLM 650. And a little bit more detail in the conflicts that peace faker Trump is doing under the guise of all so much more than what's really going on. Really stepping back and seeing, well, the United States started all this problem by declaring war. Every time it declares war, it doesn't really do it, does it? Doesn't really finish the job. It just uses it as an excuse, doesn't it? But on this saga of Venezuela, we now see that Trump is lying. And I continue to ask, why does he do this? Does he think it makes dealer Don look deft? He's lied about wanting regime change. They're sitting there in Venezuela, denies, deny, deny. Must have a lawyer giving him some suggestions or something. The natural resources of those people are not enough, apparently. Now, he wants to, mobster style, dictate the government of the Venezuelan people, as I have said last episode. And lying will not make America great again, but that's what he does. It only proves it wasn't great before, more than a global thug. Maduro offered U.S. sweeping economic concessions. I would like the people to put themselves in Maduro's place and think about what he's done there. He's facing this big problem. The United States is promoting this guy's no good. He turns around and says, well, I've got a bunch of resources and you want them. You don't have to come and kill us, take us out. We'll make a deal for him. That's not good enough. So much for the wheeler dealer Don. Venezuela has offered a U.S. sweeping economic concessions, including a potential agreement to allow American companies to take a major stake in its oil sector in secret talks that lasted 4 months, the New York Times reported on Friday. Washington, however, is said to have rejected the deal, with the political future of President Nicolas Maduro being the key sticking point. So there you have it. Regime change, despite all the denials. It's not enough. Trump will take 10% from a domestic corporation. Now he wants it all somewhere else. Over the past several weeks, Washington has conducted several strikes off Venezuela's coast against what is called drug boats, in quotes, killing more than 24 people and expanding its military presence in the region. And I think I just read that the number has actually jumped up to maybe 20 or 23 as they keep just whacking people without due process, without stopping them. Just make the claim. As I said, Trump doesn't matter. He wants to make a claim, then he just whacks you. So if you're traveling around, he finds that you're an enemy of his state, he's going to whack you. U.S. officials have accused Maduro of having links to narcotics networks, a charge that Maduro denies. Caracas has accused Washington of seeking regime change, which U.S. officials have denied. Deniers of the obvious now admit it. Right? Washington is seeking and has been seeking regime change, and providing the no proof for the U.S. claims of narcotic network links. So this is really only about a geopolitical control over South America, and the U.S. is not just interested in bananas this time. Even most favored nation status is not enough with these natural resource deals. Unnamed American and Venezuelan officials told the New York Times that behind the public hostilities, Caracas made a wide-ranging diplomatic offer to Washington. It reportedly included a proposal to open all existing and future oil and gold projects to American companies, grant preferential contracts to U.S. businesses, redirect Venezuelan oil exports from China to the U.S., and scale back energy and mining deals with China, Iranian, and Russian companies. The talks, held over several months between Maduro's top aides and the U.S. envoy Richard Grenell, aimed to de-escalate tensions, the article said. While progress was reportedly made on economic terms, the two sides failed to agree on Maduro's political future, the report said. And since when is it up to Trump to dictate to people of Venezuela who does or does not run their government? Where is it written the United States has a vote to cast, let alone a unilateral power of veto? There's the same disrespect Trump has for the American people, it seems to me. Publicly speaking sweet nothings, while privately conspiring to destroy America first. Oh, and Israel Firster with Trump Resort Casino and Kushner Water Theme Park from the river to the sea. Do you see? An earlier report by the NYT claimed Trump ordered the dialogue with Venezuela be broken off after he had grown frustrated that Maduro would not voluntarily relinquish power. The paper also said the U.S. was drafting plans for a potential military escalation. So how many more ways do we prove the intent is regime change? The deal the Don should have taken, monopolizing Venezuelan natural resources, isn't a deal he can't refuse. Because if he uses the military and takes it all, he can put his name anywhere in that country he chooses. Like maybe Trump's Isla de Margarita Resort Casino and Kushner Water Theme Park by the Sea. And maybe even for those Israelis that fled their cherished Holy Land to Greece, which is now throwing them out because of the invasion and entitlement chaos they caused, and because Trump never saw a beachfront property go to waste, like any fabricated crisis. Even now, apparently at any cost, if Gaza wasn't enough of a proof. And this time, your sons and daughters in the military. Maduro, meanwhile, has warned that Venezuela would enter into a state of armed struggle if attacked and has increased military readiness across the country. It is not too terrific. Not beautiful. I hope people are listening here about what's going on. Trump confirmed CIA covert ops in Venezuela, but President won't say if he gave the green light to take out Maduro. What else would the CIA be doing there? Arranging a drug deal? President Trump has confirmed authorizing covert CIA operations in Venezuela. Speaking at the White House on Wednesday, Trump also floated the idea of military strikes against drug cartels there, citing two motivations. Claims that Venezuela has emptied their prisons in the United States and ongoing concerns about narcotics flowing in by sea. But wasn't that like the last administration that would have reportedly allowed all that? And his problem is he just has to clean it up, and it sounds like he was doing a good job. You got to go to war? And that's just, again, a claim by the United States, a pretense. The BBC notes that it is a rare move for a sitting president to acknowledge covert CIA actions. One of the good things about Trump is that he's kind of off the cuff that way. Trump made the remarks after he was asked about the New York Times report on a classified document authorizing CIA agents to take lethal action inside Venezuela. The U.S. has already amped up military action in the Caribbean, launching at least 5 strikes on boats suspected of ferrying drugs, resulting, it says here, in 27 deaths. UN human rights experts have criticized these actions as extrajudicial executions, but Washington maintains that the vessels targeted were tied to narco-terrorist networks. But let me remind y'all, it's not supposed to be whether it's tied to a network, it's whether or not it actually threatens the United States of America, the people in it. So, looking only now, the United States is only now looking at Venezuela to take it over? Is that what we read there? And what do we then think of who did the rest of the coups the U.S. has caused in South America, if only now? The more Trump talks, the more foolish he looks. I mean, beyond the babbling that he does. Can his word be trusted for anything besides causing genocide, theft, destruction, mayhem, or chaos? Tensions are rising in Caracas, where President Nicolas Maduro has responded to the uptick in American military activity by ordering exercises involving the military, police, and civilian militias. Venezuelan officials are framing the U.S. moves as attempts to topple Maduro and seize the country's resources. So here he just offered most of them in a partnership. That's not good enough. And remember, we're not talking about a little bit of oil. Venezuela is said to have more oil than any other nation in its reserves. Vice President Delcy Rodriguez and Interior Minister Diosdado Cabello issued defiant statements Wednesday, warning of resistance and accusing the United States of plotting to rob Venezuela of its oil. When Trump was asked Wednesday if he had given the CIA the authority to take out Maduro, he replied, quote, "That's a ridiculous question for me to be given. Not really a ridiculous question, but wouldn't it be a ridiculous question for me to answer?" And again, unilaterally working, we find more evidence of the mobster at work. No coordination. Don't work with anybody. Just whatever I want, just because Hamas is skipping signing the Trump peace deal. The banishing of militants from the Gaza under the United States president's plan is absurd, a spokesman for the group has told reporters. Again, the unilateral action. Who was involved here and who wasn't? Hamas representatives will not attend the signing ceremony for the United States mediated peace deal in Egypt on Monday, the group's spokesman, Hussam Bandran, has told the press. He also voiced misgivings about certain points in the plan promoted by U.S. President Donald Trump. On Sunday, Al Arabiya quoted Bandran as saying that, quote, Hamas will not be involved in the signing process. Only mediators and American and Israeli officials will be present. Meanwhile, Shosh Bedrosian, a spokeswoman for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, stated that, quote, no Israeli official will attend the summit either. The French news agency also quoted Hamas Bandran as stressing that, quote, the talk about expelling Palestinians, whether they are Hamas members or not, for their lands is absurd and nonsense. The Hamas representative described the implementation of the second phase of the peace plan as fraught, quote, many complexities and difficulties. Yes, it is, I would say. Anybody looking into this will see that. The previous ceasefire was ended unilaterally by Israel in March, with Prime Minister Netanyahu recently suggesting that the Israeli Defense Forces could resume its offensive in Gaza should Hamas refuse to disarm. And why not the Israeli foreigners illegally and belligerently occupying Palestinian land be disarmed? But no signatories are the parties that are supposedly involved. So from the Department of Conspicuously Missing, U.S., Egypt, Qatar, and Turkey signed document on Gaza ceasefire deal. U.S. President Donald Trump and other leaders mediating the Middle East conflict resolution on Monday signed the Gaza peace deal. Apart from Trump, the documents were signed by Egyptian President Abdel Fattah Sisi, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, and Qatari Prime Minister Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdul Rahman Al Thani. So, who is missing from the ceasefire deal? Explains this is self-serving and not intended to bring actual peace between the missing parties to genocide, the non-Semitic illegal belligerent occupiers and the victims of that illegal occupation, the Palestinian people, at least some of, if not most of which, are a Semitic people. Who is missing from the signatories of the self-serving ceasefire deal, so-called? The indispensable parties having a right of self-determination and of territory, which are the Palestinians solely, and imposing upon the Palestinian people a two-state solution contrary to the stated will of the representatives of the Palestinian people. Trump also declared that World War III will not begin in the Middle East now as a peace agreement has been reached, bringing an end to the conflict in the Gaza Strip. So where is it planned to begin then? And I did not read that Iran is a signatory, did you? And we're still looking at Bomb Moran, right? Quote, it's the biggest, most complicated peace deal, and also it's the place that could lead to tremendous problems like World War III, Trump told reporters during Gaza peace agreement signing ceremony. There's always talk about World War III, that it would start in the Middle East, and that's not going to happen. We don't want it to start anywhere, actually, but it's not going to happen, Trump told reporters during the Gaza peace agreement signing ceremony. Mr. Flip-Flop. This is really a terrifying statement, knowing the deception Trump is capable of, for instance, with Iran, and feigning to be in negotiations, which turned out to be a deception to cover the bombing of Iran without cause, and for Israel. Anticipating tremendous problems, likely made up. World War III is on the table, is what I read there. Certainly a glowing club to threaten to beat the nations of the people with. The violating their rights of self-determination and sovereign held territory. Also Trump. And you don't have to take it from some guy behind a woodshed if in your fact challenge. Let's hear it from Professor Mehran Kamrava from Georgetown University, Qatar, from the land of one of the parties to the ceasefire deal, so-called. No Mideast dawn while Palestinian aspirations ignored. Not even meeting their aspirations. How far removed from their right of self-determination, then? So this professor anticipates even worse than I have been stating, relying solely on international law, recognizing the rights of the people to self-determination and territory. There is something before that. The aspirations of the people, completely disregarded by the world, and in particular the parties to the ceasefire deal, so mischaracterized. The acknowledgement by Trump in the ceasefire imposition for statehood as aspiration of the people of Palestine, taking as if he represents the Palestinians or asks them, is misplaced. Statehood has to be more than an aspiration. It's required to be a fact, not a mere aspiration, and over the entirety of the territory known since the olden times to be Palestine, notwithstanding all the people that say no, it didn't exist. Donald Trump has hailed a dawn of a new Middle East after the Gaza ceasefire, promising beautiful, brighter future in his Knesset address in Israel. But the professor asks, does that vision reflect reality or the interests of the wider Middle East? Okay, but we haven't solved the problem for the Palestinians yet, right? I mean, this is getting a little ahead of us in this article. And why does Trump say that about the Middle East only to the Knesset, that the future of an illegal belligerent occupier will be a beautiful, brighter future over the Middle East, especially when Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said repeatedly that the Palestinian state, quote, will never happen, close quote. And then they throw out of the Knesset address representatives of the very people the deal was purportedly to help, the Palestinians. Again, can you make sense of this for me? Quote, as long as Palestinian aspirations are ignored and relegated to marginal status, I don't think there will be a lasting peace, both with the Palestinians themselves and also by political aspirants who are non-Palestinian but use the plight of the Palestinian for their own political purposes, states Professor Kamrava. Decisions about Palestine have been made without Palestinians since 1948, the professor notes, and this time is no different. Once again, they're getting the wrong end of the deal. During Trump's Knesset address, Israeli MPs Aman Odeh and Ofer Kassif from the Arab List disrupted the speech, holding signs reading, "Recognize Palestine." They were swiftly removed from the chamber. So this wasn't a Trump just blowing smoke and sweet nothings to the Israelis as he proceeded with the planned respectful of the Palestinians that they will enjoy a beautiful, brighter future. Quote, I don't anticipate an end to the prolonged episodes of instability in the coming years so long as the Palestinian predicament is ignored the way it is, Kamrava says. The pundit argues that the U.S. and Israel widely viewed the Middle East as close allies are misreading the region, particularly their disregard of Palestinian suffering and their actions against Qatar and Iran. Those strategic miscalculations may backfire, according to the academic. And where is Russia to call out and act to stop the disregard of self-determination and of territory? The very disregard Russia claims to be vindicating in the people in the Donbass. Does not a peace deal make? If you haven't wanted to hear it behind woodshed prior, reality is. Trump warns we will have no choice but to engage and kill Hamas if bloodshed persists in Gaza. Strongman of the world, and he has no choice. Really? Then who is we? Let me ask this a couple times. We? Trump threatens military intervention to disarm Hamas by force if internal violence persists in Gaza, warning it will happen quickly and perhaps violently. Violently disarm the Palestinians, the peacemaker says, even though they have a universal right to defend themselves. The warning shifts from Trump's earlier dismissal of Hamas's killing rival gang members, which he said didn't bother me much. Tensions mount over hostage returns as Israeli officials demand faster action while Hamas maintains it has honored ceasefire commitments. But those militarized Israeli-supported factions in Gaza have been killing Palestinians. In fact, Palestinian journalist Saleh al-Jafarawi, widely known for documenting Israel's war on Gaza, was abducted and murdered by the Israeli-linked Dog Hushmash clan militia fighting Hamas in the Sabra neighborhood, some members of which gang Hamas then later executed. And it was agreed prior Hamas would maintain that order. But why has Israel been allowed to continue killing where Hamas is forbidden, even to protect Palestinians? Does not bode well for the besieged Palestinians. But the deceit gets richer still. The president did not say how he would follow through with his threat posted on his Truth Social platform, and the White House did not immediately respond to a request for a comment seeking clarity. But Trump also made clear he had limited patience for the killings that Hamas has carried out against rival factions inside the devastated territory. Quote, they will disarm, and if they don't do so, we will disarm them, and it'll happen quickly and perhaps violently, Trump said. Hamas-run police maintain a high degree of public security after the militants seized power in Gaza 18 years ago, while also cracking down on dissent. They largely melted away in recent months as Israeli forces seized large areas of Gaza and targeted Hamas security forces with airstrikes. Powerful local families and armed gangs, including anti-Hamas factions backed by Israel, stepped into the void. Many are accused of hijacking humanitarian aid and selling it for profit, contributing to Gaza's starvation crisis. But we will have no choice, Trump says. And who is we, pray tell? And here's what's really going on to exploit the Palestinians further. And who is in charge of these funds and banks of the world? IMF says it assesses level of damages, immediate needs of Gaza, will coordinate efforts. The International Monetary Fund assesses the level of damages and the immediate needs in the Gaza Strip and will coordinate its efforts with other international organizations. Director of the IMF Middle East and Central Asia Department, Jihad Azur, said on Friday, quote, we are currently assessing the level of damages, the immediate needs and recovery, Azur told reporters. He pointed out that the fund contributes to the international coordination framework within its mandate and looks forward to cooperating with its partners, including the World Bank and the UN agencies. Didn't the Zionist-aligned Milei of Argentina just go this route and crippled Argentina economy, requiring the United States Treasury through Soros' protege agent, billionaire boy Bessent, to bail Argentina out of its economic chainsaw massacre to the tune of another $40 billion? Trump's 20-point Gaza peace plan was unveiled on September 29th. It called for an immediate ceasefire contingent on the release of hostages within 24 hours. The document also proposed that Hamas and other Palestinian armed factions should have no role in governing the Gaza Strip and that control of the enclave should be transferred to a technocratic committee supervised by an international body led by Trump. For those of you thinking Trump isn't a good little globalista. And what about Trump not believing he will get to heaven? Why'd that even come up? Trump concedes he may not get into heaven aboard Air Force One en route to Israel. Well, clearly he's not going to take his airplane, that's for sure. But more seriously, Trump concedes he may not get into heaven, and that the president is less confident about his chances of entering the pearly gates than he has been on previous occasions. President Donald Trump has again addressed his prospects of being rewarded for his peacemaking initiatives in the afterlife, admitting for the first time, quote, "I think I'm not maybe heaven-bound." Speaking to reporters aboard Air Force One en route to Israel Sunday, Trump was asked by Peter Doocy of Fox News about his recent remarks dwelling on the whether or not he might be permitted to enter the pearly gates and whether his peace plan for Israel and Hamas in Gaza had advanced his case. Quote, "I'm being a little cute," close quote. The president chuckled in response to the question, quote, "I don't think there's anything going to get me into heaven. I really don't. I think I'm not maybe heaven bound. I may be in heaven right now as we fly on Air Force One. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to make heaven, but I've made life a lot better for a lot of people." Well, Trump replying, "I'm being a little cute. I don't think there's anything going to get me into heaven. I really don't. I think I'm not maybe heaven bound. I may be in heaven right now as we fly on Air Force One. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to make heaven, but I've made life a lot better for a lot of people." A little cute or not, his getting into heaven, so-called, has nothing to do with Gaza, the ceasefire, Air Force One, nor anyone the Messiah thinks he's saved. And no, oh deluded one, Air Force One is not heaven. Joking aside, it's real simple, as I understand it. If not easy, it's as simple as confessing faith in Jesus Christ as your Savior, acknowledging His death and resurrection for the forgiveness of your sins, and then your works thereby. But why has Trump refused to do that, and anticipates that he will never have faith in Jesus Christ as his Savior, acknowledging the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ for the forgiveness of his sins? And despite stating the intention on August 19, 2025, that "I want to try to get to heaven, if possible." You think touching that wall in ritual obeisance, that he's made a different commitment, and worse, he knows that? You see what the corrupted Judeo-Christian woke ideology has done? Does it make that picture of all those woke Judeo-Christian cohorts' tentacles stretched out to touch him, preying upon him, yes, preying upon him, seated front and center, fingers loosely clasped, even more blasphemous as to the continual deception promoted by these people? Trump has fallen and apparently does not intend or won't get up. So much so, "and pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall," while speaking in the Knesset temple to the synagogue of Satan, Israel's parliament, a proud Trump openly praised his daughter, Ivanka, that she had rejected Jesus Christ, converting, he said. Truly loving political Israel so much more, she converted. Not mentioning converting to what from the Christian Presbyterian Protestant she was raised in to obtain entry into the political state and for what only can be considered an anti-Christian Knesset to the exuberant accolades and standing ovation of Satan's minions within. Open rejection of Jesus Christ is eternal condemnation. But being Messiah president, Trump is immune, remember? Maybe he's forgotten or cognitively challenged enough not to realize Ivanka is not immune. Or so egotistically blind to see that the immunity of the world means the devil. I pray they both change their mind, body and spirit. And also no due process, Trump. Two Trinidadians killed in a U.S. boat strike. So right off, it seems this isn't about stopping Venezuela drug cartels, right? Right off. The fifth U.S. destruction of the boat between Venezuela and Trinidad has taken the life of two Trinidadians, with relatives disputing American accounts that it was fetching cocaine for onward shipments to the U.S. mainland. Local media on Thursday reported the Trinidadian's national, Chad Charpo Joseph, 26, and a second local identified as Sam Maru, were among the six killed when U.S. warships opened fire on a vessel sailing off the Venezuelan coast on Wednesday. The White House alleged that the boat had been fetching cocaine bales of its cargo, an accusation that neighbors and relatives dispute, contending that Joseph in particular is a known fisherman. Joseph is from Las Cuevas, a seaside village on Trinidad's west coast, looking into the Gulf of Paria, separating the two nations. The Guardian newspaper quoted Lenore Burnley, Joseph's mom, as saying that the second of her six children was no drug dealer, and that he was trying to return home from Venezuela. The rival Trinidad Express said Joseph had been in Colombia and was transiting Venezuela when the boat was blown out of the water by the U.S. military. Quote, I leave everything in God's hands. He knows, he sees, and I does say, he does give you what you can bear. He wouldn't give you what you cannot bear. So I leave everything to God. I find it wrong because it was people who will be innocent, and that they will still do and say otherwise. So I can't justify it to other people, but it's not right. The sea law is they are supposed to stop the boat and intercept it, not blow it up like that. Grandma Christine Clement said she would prefer if he remained in Venezuela because of the dangers of being on the high seas. Quote, the first time he was coming up, they shot up the boat, and he ended up surviving. Some people take care of him. 2 days ago, I asked his mother when he was coming, and she said something had happened to the boat, and he couldn't come back again and had to turn back, she told the local publication. There have been reports about local fishermen staying away from the waters for fear of being mistaken for an alleged narcotic smuggling boat. And that might be another purpose beyond that regime change and natural resource theft. Trump is starving people out, controlling the fishery and the exports from that, under the pretense of Venezuela drug cartels threatening Americans, WMDs, or some such fabricated nonsense, putting pressure on the local Caribbean countries to make a deal to get what the United States wants. Because, also Trump, meanwhile, U.S. Navy Admiral Alvin Hosley, commander of U.S. Southern Command, Southcom, recently wrapped up a two-country visit to Antigua, Barbuda, and Grenada. Even before his arrival, Antiguan Prime Minister Gaston Brown ruled out the possibility of the country hosting any assets of the United States military on its soil. In Grenada, however, Admiral Hosley met with senior law enforcement officials at police headquarters in St. George's on Wednesday to officially request permission for a temporary radar station to be installed at Maurice Bishop International Airport. At press time, there has been no official response from the Grenadian government. The U.S. efforts at regional outreach come after months of diplomatic pressure on countries in the region over their cooperation with Cuba on medical missions in the Caribbean. In August, it was announced that the U.S. State Department that it had canceled the visas belonging to officials of several countries, including Grenada. Local media sources later revealed that it was Grenadian Finance Minister Dennis Cornwall and his estranged wife who had been targeted by the visa revocations. The Grenadian government is also facing economic pressure from the United States. Grenada is one of 12 countries currently facing a ban on exporting fish to the United States beginning January 1, 2026, for failing to comply with the requirements of the United States Marine Mammals Protection Act of 1972. Analysis in local press outlets suggests that such a ban, if it comes into effect, would likely deal a crippling blow to the island's fishery industry. The recent deployment of roughly 4,500 U.S. troops across the Caribbean, including units assigned to Puerto Rico and U.S. Virgin Islands marks one of the most significant American military buildups in the region in decades. On St. Croix, soldiers have been stationed at the South Shore Refinery and Terminal Facility, Man Camp, transforming the site into a logistical hub for operations in the Southern Caribbean. Apparently preparing for more expensive conflicts to occupy your sons and daughters, in particular, the politically problematic and increasingly aware Gen Z. Moron, more foolishness. Also Trump, also Hegseth. U.S. War Secretary threatens Russia. Washington will impose costs on Moscow if the Ukraine conflict isn't settled, Pete Hegseth has said. The United States War Department stands ready to do its part to impose costs on Russia over the Ukraine conflict, War Secretary Hegseth has said, speaking in Brussels, Belgium, on Wednesday ahead of a meeting of countries coordinating military support for Ukraine. He lauded an NATO, NATO member's recent militarization push. Quote, if this war does not end, if there's no path to peace in the short term, then the United States, along with our allies, will take the steps necessary to impose costs on Russia, Hegseth said. Quote, if we must take this step, the U.S. War Department stands ready to do our part in ways that only the United States can do, he added. How stupid, that's S-T-O-O-P-I-D for you hearing sensitive, how stupid are these people? How arrogant are they in their disregard of the facts, of their own causation? As any criminal, how foolish to think that criminal recalcitrance and lack of respect and insult would persuade properly functioning men and women. The U.S. is responsible to stop this hybrid war it started with its 2014 coup and subsequent genocide of the people of the Donbas, not Russia. Russia will stop when the U.S., NATO, and Euro Union stop the Ukraine they feed. The United States, continued by Trump, causes the condition perpetuating the conflict, doing nothing to stop it. Just like in Venezuela, just like the Palestinians are feeling in Palestine, these uniparty lunatics. On Sunday, President Donald Trump said he could supply Ukraine with U.S.-made Tomahawk cruise missiles if the Ukraine conflict, quote, is not going to get settled, and admitted that it would be a new step of aggression. Of course it would. So it's admitted. Trump knows, but doesn't care. Or for peace. And admitting that the Tomahawk missiles, as we had heard last episode, won't do anything useful, the arms dealer that Trump is. President Peacemaker only wants the aggression to escalate, as Russia has already identified. Former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev responded to the threat in a statement on Telegram, where he said it is impossible to distinguish between Tomahawk missiles carrying nuclear warheads and conventional ones after they have been launched. Have I been talking about the nuclear glow and the postulated cricketism, folks? It's how close we are with these decisions, that they're even considering these things. It's S-T-O-O-P-I-D. Supplies of the missiles to Ukraine would represent a new stage of escalation since U.S. troops would have to be directly involved in using them, President Vladimir Putin said earlier this month. Russian Foreign Minister spokeswoman Maria Zakharova said on Wednesday that the Ukraine's Vladimir Zelensky wanted to use the Tomahawks to conduct new terrorist attacks against Russia aimed at escalating the conflict. Moscow has blamed the pause in the direct Russian-Ukrainian peace talks on Kiev, arguing that it lacks interest in a settlement emboldened by Western military support. Russia has also said to Trump, providing U.S.-operated nuclear-capable long-range Tomahawk missiles that can strike deep into Russia, quote, this will lead to destruction of our relations, or at least the positive trends that have emerged in these relations, that Putin had said in an interview. And so important is this threat in subsequent Newstis. Trump and Putin talked about these matters ahead of Trump's meeting with Zelensky in Washington. It sounds like Putin wanted to speak to Trump's folly firsthand, maybe with so many ear-bending visitations that Trump's going to get, that Zelensky and Netanyahu should be provided permanent quarters at the White House that they share. What do you think? But getting back to this discussion, speaking of earbending, did you notice in the latest Trump photo kerfuffle where Trump complains about his lack of hair, just below old nicked ear is looking pretty good. One might even say it appears perfect. What a healer or showman, right, P.T. WWE Barnum? And I understand in the latest breaking news, Trump met with Zelensky, and Trump has backed off on those tomahawks. So someone got to him, maybe Putin did, and showed the error of his ways, and he's not going to go with it, which is a great deal right there by itself. And Trump administration threatens Russia despite being sabotaged by the United Kingdom's 1 million pound man, not weight, money. Why did Boris Johnson take his donor to Ukraine? Exclusive linked files offer a glimpse of the ex-prime minister's ministry's relationship with Christopher Harborne. As he boarded the night train to Ukraine, Boris Johnson had a usual entourage of aides and bodyguards, plus the man who had given him £1 billion. The Boris files, leaked documents from Johnson's private office, have exposed how the former prime minister has sought to enrich himself since leaving office by sitting down with Venezuelan despot and courting Mohammed bin Salman and the Saudi crown prince accused of ordering the murder of a journalist. The Ukrainian cause, by contrast, is sacred to Johnson, one political consultant says, an enduring source of moral authority for a politician who was forced out of Downing Street amid scandal. The leaked files raises questions about whether even he has blurred the lines between public service and money-making. And this sacred cause of enduring moral authority was instrumental in getting the Ukraine to not finally agree to an existing peace agreement between Russia and the Ukraine, thus continuing the conflict to the last Ukrainian, and for which Trump now blames Putin and Hegseth to threaten Russia. But maybe not until the children's are out. Melania Trump reveals private talks with Putin. First Lady Melania Trump has revealed that she has been in direct communication with Russian President Vladimir Putin for months, engaging in a behind-the-scenes diplomatic initiative to reunite Ukrainian children displaced by the conflict with their families. Kiev, however, has accused Russia of kidnapping. Subsequent stories, if you read, that was kind of leveled out, that it's been proven over and over again Kiev is lying. At any rate, moving on. Speaking on Friday, the First Lady said the outreach began after she sent a letter to Putin last August. Quote, he responded in writing, signaling a willingness to engage with me directly, she stated. Since then, the two have maintained an open channel of communication regarding the welfare of these children. According to the First Lady, both sides have taken part in several back-channel meetings and calls over the past 3 months, all in good faith. The talks have led to the reunification of 8 Ukrainian children with their families within the past 24 hours, she said. Quote, each child has lived in turmoil due to the conflict, she said. 3 were separated from their parents due to frontline fighting and taken to Russia, while 5 others were separated from their relatives across borders. Among them was one young girl who has now been reunited from Ukraine to Russia. Trump said her representative has worked directly with Putin's team to facilitate the reunification, and the Russia provided documentation, including biographies, photographs, and reports on the children's care. Quote, the U.S. government confirmed the facts contained within those documents are accurate, she added. Russia's Child Rights Commissioner, Maria Lvova-Belova, thanked Melania Trump for her humanitarian efforts, and Maria was also included in that child abuse case with Putin. It didn't happen. What I want to say, words of gratitude to the First Lady of the United States for her attention and care towards families of children affected by the military conflict, Lvova-Belova said in a video message on Friday. Now, how is it Melania can work successfully with the Russians without threats and the peacemaker can't? Why is it? Now, teleporting back to January 2024, some new, different information. I'm not sure if I talked about this or not, but it's interesting what came out. I thought it was interesting. I wouldn't throw it in there today. Nebraska weighs in on cattle emission conversation. Environmental impacts of cattle emissions have been a contentious conversation in recent years. Some climate-conscious consumers are concerned with cattle emissions potential and their impact. Researchers at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln, are discovering results that may improve and optimize our management practices and ease those concerns. Ellen Erickson, professor of the Department of Animal Science at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln, and Tala Awada, professor and associate dean in the Agricultural Research Division, conduct transdisciplinary research to better understand cattle emissions of greenhouse gases and the cycle of capturing and storing these gases to fully understand cattle's role in environmental issues. The conversation on cattle and climate has produced some incorrect assumptions, Erickson said. However, sound data collected across many years in various environments have produced quite accurate information. At this point, information truly shows the accurate picture of the effect of cattle on the environment and on climate, and cattle actually contribute to a smaller portion of the overall emissions than originally thought. And I'll say as we get through this, it's even better than that. Awada said that the research in transdisciplinary and investigates the whole production system of beef with the purpose of creating sustainable, profitable, and resilient systems. The research on greenhouse gas emissions is just one component of the multifaceted research, so information provided to the consumer is science-based, relevant, and sound. My interjection for this, where has this been? Where has this study been all this time that Bill Gates is getting the upper hand on us? The goal is to make sure that the consumer's decision is based on sound information rather than incorrect information. Can I ask again, where has this study been before the experts, the consensus, said otherwise? Impact of cattle biological systems. Cattle have always naturally produced methane, so it's important for consumers to understand the biological system that caused cattle to belch methane and the actual environment impact of doing so. Due to cattle's unique four-chambered stomach, they naturally produce methane because of the oxygen-lacking environment that the bacteria in their stomachs live in, Erickson said. Just like humans, after cattle digest feed, they breathe out carbon dioxide. That all-important, dangerous, toxic CO2 is life, isn't it? But cattle also belch methane after eating. Methane has drawn concern because it is known as a more potent greenhouse gas. All theories that have never been proven either, and they're not even talking about that here, but Erickson said, and because it has a higher ability to trap heat. However, he said that in 2019, a group of atmospheric scientists from Oxford found the methane is not as potent as previously believed because it only lasts in the atmosphere for 10 years. Well, NASA found out CO2 is a mitigator of the temperature. In contrast, CO2 lasts around 1,000 years, but it's a mitigator in the atmosphere. Another difference between the methane and CO2 is the amount of found in the atmosphere. CO2, mostly coming from energy and fossil fuel, makes up 79% of all greenhouse gases. Never, just an idea, never been proven. Whereas methane only accounts for 11%, according to the EPA. In Nebraska, a large part of the cattle lifespan is spent out in pasture, which will play a major role in carbon sequestration, Erickson said. Quote, optimizing grazing system is the best way to ensure the carbon is being taken up by the pasture. Cattle are growing from utilization of the forage, and greenhouse gas emissions are being offset of cattle from birth to slaughter. Pasture grazing for 180 days of the year is the best way to ensure cattle do not have a negative impact on climate, according to Erickson. For example, while pasture grazing is important, weather conditions in Nebraska do not allow producers to have cattle graze year-round because of the grass growth. Erickson said finishing cattle in dry lots allows for a year-round beef supply and a faster rate of gain, further reducing negative impacts. When optimizing grazing is applied to based on the climate and the region, there is more carbon sequestered than what cattle breathes out in CO2 or produce in methane, Erickson said. Erickson, Awada, and their team at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln, and the University Department of Agriculture Agricultural Research Service, USDA ARS, compare two different CAF systems measuring carbon sequestration and greenhouse gas emissions in the system. The system is part of a long-term agroecosystem research USDA-funded network where the team records cattle emissions and pastures of dry lots in Eastern Nebraska Research Education Center. For the 1 year of above-average precipitation, the grazing system had a positive impact on the environment, Awada said. We continue with our measurements to capture inter- and intra-annual variability in greenhouse gases as impacted by climate and management practices before we could draw conclusions. Along with Erickson and Awada, other team members, including Andrew Suka, Watson, Ziong, and McDonald, along with Virginia Jin, Marty Schmier from the USDA, these researchers continue to not only record cattle's emissions, but also work to find different inputs, such as diet additives, that could reduce cattle's methane emissions as well. Key takeaways. Cattle's potential impact on climate issues has been a continuous conversation in recent years. Methane, the gas, greenhouse gas, has always been naturally produced by cattle due to their ruminant digestive system. Because of methane's shorter lifespan of 10 years, it's not accumulating in the atmosphere as long as the other greenhouse gases, and the UNL team is researching emissions in carbon uptake pastures and dry lots to analyze the impact the entire system has on the environment, and have found cattle emissions environmental impact varies and may not be as bad as previously thought. For more information, see the link, and I have the link over to the report. You can get to download greenhouse gas emissions from two beef systems from birth to slaughter in eastern Nebraska. It might go well with Vince Easley, his discussion with the tortoise and the cow in the great out west where we graze cattle. Might help to find out that they do good out there together too. This has been BTWRLM 650, and I'll be with you next week. Tech Tips for Nature Willing.
It goes cold, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, piercing free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, lessons to learn. Dose by dose, behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. House words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. Law to liberty, the spectrum wide. In house court, no place to hide. A cantaloupe bass, ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst. Behind the woodshed. Next week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.